Welcome back to the Lyme Podcast. My name is Aaron Alexander, and this is a place that we bring together the world's leading experts in all things health and wellness to help you optimize your mind, body, and movement. Today's conversation is with my new friend, Kimmy Inch. Kimmy is a dominatrix. She is an intimacy coach. She is a somatic therapist and a really brilliant thinker, very compassionate, and it was great to get to have a conversation with someone like this. This conversation I found to be amazing, that it was hilarious, that it was enlightening, opened up some other perspectives with myself around intimacy, sexuality, the meaning of sexuality, the meaning of intimacy, and how it can actually be utilized as a tool to learn about yourself. A lot of it was around the healing or integrating of past traumas, and like I mentioned, using the space of sexual intimacy as a container to go deeper into the self and exactly how to do that. So if you're a person in a relationship, if you're a person that experiences any shame, guilt, fear, anxiety, any type of attachment patterns that perhaps you would like to work on within yourself, the realm of physical, mental, emotional intimacy is a really great path to do that. And that's exactly what we talk about with the beautiful Kimmy Inch. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Thank you for subscribing so you get each week's episodes. Thanks for leaving us reviews. Thanks for checking out the YouTube page so you can see the video version of this. You can see the beautiful Kimmy and myself in the studio in Austin recording out there. I hope you love this conversation. I thought it was great. I'd love to have Kimmy back on. And here we go. Back to the podcast with the beautiful Kimmy Inch.
Kimmy, you just had a Kriyavati.
Yes, sir.
We're locked and loaded.
Thank you.
I was just commenting on how the heck it's possible that a dominatrix has a name like Kimmy Inch from birth.
That's right.
How did that happen? You were destined to be here.
Well, Kimmy actually in Old English means leader. So I think it's pretty fitting being that I am an erotic leader. And that's what I get off on is leading people through really expansive, altered states of consciousness and experiences that really blow their minds and hearts open.
Oh. Aaron means, actually comes from an Old English derivative. It means morning wood. Rock hard morning wood.
Is that right?
That's true. That's
wow. How appropriate. I like it.
My mom says it means tower of strength, which is kind of like morning wood.
That's poetic. Yeah, I like that.
Is the origination of a kink for a person? Is it taking, how does one develop a kink?
Yeah.
And what is a kink?
Well, there's a common misconception that our kinks could come from our traumas. And it's a way of eroticizing something that is familiar, but trying to bring pleasure to the situation.
Like taking power back.
That's exactly it. However, I like to say that most oftentimes, our kinks come from the impressions we had growing up and what we learned about relationships and sexuality and connection and depth and intimacy. And because of those impressions, there's ways that we might eroticize some of the unmet needs that we had as children growing up. And that's a way of very cleverly creating more balance and harmony in our lives. So when people ask me, like, you know, what are the people like that come to see you? There's an assumption that, especially for men who are submissive that come to see me, that maybe they're submissive all the time. And I'm like, actually, no, most of them are usually in very powerful positions and they're Fortune 500 company owners and they're politicians and they're CEOs. And they're a lot of the times men with a lot of power that are actually looking for a way to surrender that power and have an opportunity to receive, which creates more balance and harmony in their lives.
What are some of the standout unmet needs that people are missing out on in childhood, in your experience?
Absolutely. I mean, for a lot of people, the sense of powerlessness as we're growing up as children with the authority figures around us, there wasn't a lot of like, oh, tune into yourself and what does your heart tell you? You know, it's like, do this, do that. And because of that sort of programming and conditioning, we might long for surrender where we can feel really held and taken care of, or we might really feel excited about taking control and stepping into power and being the one that's calling the shots because it creates a sense of safety that maybe we didn't feel growing up. So it's really different it's such a personalized experience. But I tell people, similar to your dreams that might have symbolism, Think about what are your fantasies and desires and look for the themes and symbolisms in those fantasies and desires, because there's messages in that information.
What are some of the kind of vulnerable bits from your life or your childhood or mm-hmm. your history that's kind of brought you into awareness of all of this stuff?
Well, it's by no accident I became a dominatrix, because growing up as a kid, I didn't have a lot of parental supervision, which is just a PC way of saying I had a lot of neglect growing up. Mm. And I had a lot of anger that I was completely unconscious about, especially against my father, who was just very absent from my life. Mm. So when I was introduced to kink and the idea of being a dominatrix, it was this perfect opportunity to step into power and to feel like I was safe because I was the one in control. And it was also a really great way to get back at my dad or men in general, because what better way to get back at men than to have them pay you to fuck them up? Mm. So that was basically what I had devised. And I was laughing all the way to the bank in the beginning of those dominatrix days, because I'm like, oh, get to humiliate men and beat the shit out of them and get paid all this money. And I don't have to take off my clothes. I don't have to have sex with anyone. Mm. This is great. And it was fulfilling for a period until I started doing deep inner work on myself and realized that I had this unresolved anger that was actually eating away at my soul. And when I started to work on those things and doing shadow work and things like that, I saw an opportunity to move this work beyond just making a quick buck, but actually doing something that could be literally and figuratively impactful for a person and really create some meaning in the experience so that I can make a difference in the world.
What do you think the impact that you were having on men when you were doing that actually from a place of like a subtle place of like contraction or anger compared to transitioning over to a place of love?
I think I was, you know, originally I think I could have really been re-traumatizing people in the beginning because of my own unconsciousness. I didn't know what I didn't know.
There's like a fly in the ointment.
I was I was attracting men who were using me. It's like you would think it was the other way around. Like they're paying me and I'm doing what I want to them, but they were really using me to abuse themselves. So they weren't really interested in having a meaningful experience. And I was just a tool to, you know, maybe use to abuse themselves because they didn't love themselves or they had shame or they had all these sort of things going on in the background. So when I started to shift that energy into wanting to uplift and empower and accept and celebrate another person, I started to attract clientele that was more interested in having a deeper, expansive experience, that actually were interested in understanding themselves better. And that just felt more fulfilling overall. So you really do attract, you know, whatever you're emanating out into the world.
There's a bit from Ram Dass. He's talking about how kids, they did like some research or studies and about kids being spanked. Mm. And the effect that it has on spanking, based off of what I've heard in like the discourse, the talk from Ram Dass, and I didn't actually see the research. But the suggestion from Ram Dass is it doesn't matter whether you spank or not. It matters whether you're spanking with or without love. Mm-hmm. And so if the parent is taking aggression out on the child and there's a disconnection of love, that becomes just abuse.
Absolutely.
And then you're just recapitulating trauma. You're just passing, you're passing my torch of trauma from myself and you're just like shoveling it off on the kid. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're doing it from a place of like, I love you and I want you to understand this is why we're doing this. And like we maintain connection of love, then suddenly that like swat on the bat. It's
completely
like,
different experience.
This is fine.
That's so true. Because people often say, you know, the body doesn't know any different. It just is experiencing violence. So even in a kink setting, that's abuse and that's violence. And I'm like, that's actually not true. There's an energetic quality. And what that means is when somebody's actually in their heart versus when they're not in their heart. And it's very common, especially in eroticism and sexuality, that there's times that people leave their heart at the door and they're just maybe genitally focused and that part isn't present. But it's absolutely true. Like if I'm in an erotic counter with a client, and even if I make a mistake, as long as they can feel my heart's in it, everything's going to be okay. You know, they can actually feel my presence and my attention and my accountability. And that essence really makes such a big difference when people are experiencing intense sensations, because that's all spanking is. It's an intense sensation. The result of that sensation could bring on pain. And sometimes people enjoy the pain and some people enjoy what the pain does for them with the releasing of chemicals, oxytocin, adrenaline. and serotonin, all of these different things, adrenaline, et cetera, and endorphins. But ultimately, yeah, it's not so black and white that violence is violence. There's definitely an energetic component. And because it's pre-negotiated and collaborative and co-created, that creates a very different experience for the body.
What is it about sexuality and sensuality and things of the like that seems to, based on what you're suggesting, you know, in your work with people, like going kind of like deeper into the subconscious and the psycho-emotional planes, kind of like the hardwiring of a person. What is it about that that allows a person to be opened up in those ways, to potentially be like reconfigured and, you know, healed, if that language is okay for folks?
It's true. No, because quite often when people are like, well, what is kink? What does that even mean? I say it's being turned on by the taboo, or not only what you consider to be taboo, but maybe society or your religion or your community. And when people are taking this usually well-worn path of their sexuality, which is very conventional, there's not a lot to be gained and learned in that situation, because people at that stage are using sex like they use fast food. I'm hungry. I'm going to go get some In-N-Out burger. That's easy. Let me just, you know, quench that desire for a moment so I could get on with my life. But you know, I like In-N-Out burger every once in a while, but I don't want to live off of In-N-Out burger. Like, and people sometimes don't even know that there is this gourmet experience to the erotic. And when we actually push our boundaries and push our edges, there's so much growth and learning that can happen in that place, because just by the nature of doing something that we don't normally do and taking risks and being daring in our most vulnerable state, there's so much learning that can happen. It really can be such a paradigm shift for people. Very similar when they do medicine journeys with psilocybin and MDMA, doing an intense erotic scene that you create with a trusted partner can have that expanded, altered state of consciousness where you might feel the sense of unconditional love. You might see life from a different perspective. It might be a pattern interrupt, and it also might open you up to the possibility of seeing, you know, a higher power or your higher self, depending on your belief systems.
What does that actually look like? I never heard the term "seen" other than listening to you talk about
the scene.
Yeah.
This. Yeah.
Apparently, the podcast studio seems like a scene from what you said when you came in. You're like, this is like a dumb set.
I know. I walked this. In and I this was like, ooh, out. Is this just for me?
This is just for you.
When you pull back the curtain, is it like a wall of floggers? Yeah, exactly. Like, what's going on behind that curtain?
So, what if you were taking me through a scene, if that's the appropriate language?
Sure.
What does that look like? I come into you, I'm like, you know, I've got some weird stuff with my dad, and I don't trust women, and you know, I have insecurity around my the size of my dong, and
you know, so many issues.
And, you know, all these different weird ways. How do I get a healing through the dumb sub relationship, and what does it actually look like?
Yeah, so when I'm working with clients, or if I were working with you, for example, you know, coming in and getting curious around what you want in life and what feels like it's standing in the way, and getting really curious about those things that are standing in the way, but not just like illuminating those things, but actually like saying, let's take those things, whether there's shame at play here or whether there's some limiting beliefs that need to be exposed. But instead of just talking about it, like, let's actually act them out. And like, let's have a bodily visceral experience that incorporates the whole senses, you know, all of your senses, your sexuality, all of these, you know, all of these components. And let's have an experience that could be very drastically different than what you know to be true, that really challenges that limiting belief that's standing in the way of the success or the life that you want. So we can take that information, we can eroticize it, and we can play it out in these like really straight up terms, where if you're dealing with issues of, you know, holding yourself back or shame, like we could go in one direction where I'm actually... Say that again.
Let's do shame.
So let's say shame
around sexuality. I have shame. Like, that's something that's just, I was indoctrinated into like some super religious background.
Totally.
You know, like any of
so
that
common.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I'm chronically clenching my butthole throughout the day.
You're cutting off your life force in some sense.
I'm cutting off my life force.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if we were, there's a lot of different directions. So based on talking about your desires and your boundaries, what I would be interested in curating are a couple of experiences. Maybe one of the experiences is that if I were going to be the leader and you were going to be the follower, I could put you in a position where you're rendered in a more helpless state. So maybe that incorporates shibari. Like I literally physically immobilize you and I, you know, use different techniques like sensation play or impact play to get you out of your head and into your body.
Sensation play means like little whiskers.
Could be.
Thing. Impact means spanking.
Exactly. And I want to just let you know that this is all on a scale. So there's a spectrum to all of this. You know, spanking could actually, people think it's going to be hardcore, but spanking could be done light and sensually and playfully. And something like dirty talk where people are like, oh, that's light. Well, I could do dirty talk super hardcore and intense. So we'd get really curious around what intensity level you're available for.
What does hardcore intense dirty talk mean?
That's like I rip your whole life apart, know, like you have total humiliation, degradation, you know, you're just dirt underneath my boot.
Could you humiliate me?
I could easily humiliate you.
Could you humiliate me in this podcast?
Well, this is the thing though, because you know, I could do some stereotypical cliche ideas of what humiliation is and say some words and phrases to you. But until I really understand you and your psyche, which is going to take some conversations, like it would take an intake process, because I really want to know what are some of your sensitive points. And I would learn that by getting a better picture of your childhood and how you grew up in the household and what your perception of life is.
So you'd bring it to the surface in extreme way.
I could sit here and be like you know, therapy. You're a piece of shit. And like, you know, and it probably is going to not make any difference to you ultimately, because you're like, oh, okay, sure. Like,
you
but
need something that actually,
the idea,
I actually have humiliation around.
There's nothing more powerful than making somebody doubt themselves. So the idea would be like getting curious around what are your real life fears and doubts and things that maybe exist and don't always get a lot of attention because they're parts of ourselves we don't like to look at. And what happens if we really pull those out? And you know what else I would say, Aaron? I would say, you know, I could sit here and say all these words to you, but I could never humiliate you the way you probably can humiliate yourself. And the mean things and the mean thoughts and the things that we do to ourselves, I could never compare to something like that. So if anything, maybe I'd stick you in front of the mirror and I'd say, I want to watch you humiliate yourself.
Wow.
Like, let me see you do it and let yourself see what you're saying to yourself out loud. And I'm going to hold space and witness it.
Wow.
You know, like that's that really could be a totally different way of humiliation as opposed to you're a dirty piece of shit. Like that's basic. That's really surfacey kind of stuff. And I'm more interested in really getting into the heart and soul of something so we can expose it and we can bring consciousness to it so we can have choice around it ultimately.
You're a different kind of dom.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like a tapped in. You're a therapist.
It's
like
true. Well, you know, I'm a somatic therapist. I also have a lot of tantra training and really work with energy most often because this is all it really is these designs of energy and how we channel those energies. But ultimately, my intention is to uplift and empower. So even if we did these humiliation scenes, what the progression might be if you and I continued to work with each other would be ultimately for perhaps you to ask for me to do everything that you really want me to do. So it's not forced on you. You're actually asking, I want you to humiliate me. I want you to spank me like that. You're almost like asking for every single thing and getting you connected to actually your innate power of what you want, you can create just with the ability of really naming it and claiming it. And when people have these experiences in erotic settings, they can actually say to themselves like, well, if I'm able to let go here, or if I'm able to feel empowered here, or if I'm able to, you know, have a different experience in this playroom, then why can't I have it out in the rest of the world? It's absolutely possible. But sometimes we just need to have that real experience of it first. Yeah.
What is is there a progression with a person coming to resolve with these insecurities that you see when working with a client?
Oh, absolutely.
What does that look like? And what are the actual like action steps for a person? If they're interested in exploring, perhaps there are some parts within myself that I haven't been willing to look at. And that's something that I've experienced with therapy and having a therapist really specifically calling out like, here's these things that you're deeply afraid of, apparently. And there's a lot of emotional charge around them. Yeah. You're like, you know, you can kind of see your lips are quivering a little bit, or your eyes are kind of quivering, or you're like, you know, there's tears coming to your eyes or whatever. There's like something, there's a lot here. I want you to say it. You know, and like really lean into that thing that like that which can't be said, like just come out with it.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's exactly what you're doing in the realm of like the erotic. It's very cool.
I get curious because like, you know, if things like our ego, for example, are creating obstacles for us, there's a way that we can work with it. And a lot, we do breath work, we have therapy, we have all of these different techniques and shadow work and kicking and screaming and crying our heads off. You know, there's so many different ways of approaching this, but I get curious around like, what if you just really held this idea of your shame or your ego or your fear and you fucked the shit out of it instead? You know, you actually brought this like penetrative, erotic energy to these qualities of considered shadows, and you actually made love to it, and it actually made you orgasmic. Like, that's what alchemy is to me. And I would love to tell you a quick story about this woman who came to see me because she had a real problem having orgasms for several years. Like, she wasn't able to come. She had boyfriends who were very attentive lovers, still wasn't able to come, had all the toys and vibrators and dildos, still not able to come. She came to see me as sort of this last resort. And she's like, you know, I've always wanted to just surrender. And I think maybe not being able to have an orgasm has something to do with that, but I don't know. And we went through this whole process of learning about her hell yeses and hell nos and getting a clear picture of what she was available for. But I also asked her some questions about her history. And she came from a religious background. And when she started masturbating around 4 or 5 years old, how she would do it is she would straddle a pillow and rub herself against the pillow, and that would make her have an orgasm.
That's how I do it.
Super. Well, I was going to say it's super common. You still do it that way, right?
I used to be in a pretty intimate relationship with my parents' hot tub growing up.
Oh, hey, that was the spot. That was the best.
Every day after school, I'd eat a Tony's pizza. I eat the whole pizza. Tony's is a brand of pizza in Pennsylvania. Yeah. I go out, have an experience at the hot tub.
So great.
That's a good life.
That's so good. The hot tub was the best. A girlfriend actually showed me that trick. I had no idea that was possible.
My life was so much better as a 15-year-old now that I think about it. that was a good life.
Simpler times.
That wasn't bad.
Not too shabby. And, you know, if she got caught masturbating this way or anyway, she would get in a lot of trouble and she'd be punished. And so I'm like, okay, in the back of my head thinking like, this is a really important information because this is linked to her discovery of her own self-pleasure. And so when we did the scene together, I'm taking her through this process of getting spanked and getting her tied up. And I had her tied up to the edge of my bed. She was kneeling at the edge of a canopy bed and I had her knees tied apart and I had her arms tied apart. So she was like, sort of looking like a starfish at the edge of the bed, all spread out. And I started sticking pillows underneath her body. And her eyes are like, oh, fuck, like, what's about to happen?
What's she wearing?
Sorry?
What is she wearing?
She was probably in lingerie. I was fully clothed at that time. But yeah, she was in lingerie. And I told her to start riding those pillows. And I'm making like eye contact with her. And I'm staring at her. And she's rubbing herself against these pillows. And I'm like, I want you to know you're so beautiful that pleasure is your birthright. You deserve to be in pleasure. And it's, you know, it's all for you. And so she's just having the biggest release. She's crying. Her whole body's orgasming. Wow. And she's having this experience of almost like traveling back in time and righting a wrong from her history. And she, you know, she had the biggest explosion. After we finished the session, you know, I was holding her for aftercare and we were talking and she was like, I feel like in that moment, like all the wrongs from the past were sort of corrected. And I feel like a completely different person. And she'd been going to therapy for 20 years and had never felt that way before.
There's something different, like somatics, you know, or the body, actually integrating the body is very different than just talking through things.
That is the most important thing to remember is that if our traumas happen in connection, then our healing needs to happen in connection. Right. And yeah, like kink can be so much fun, a little slap and a tickle, and yeah, you can get off. That's cool. And And that's wonderful. But also what it can be possible is like knowing that because of the relational experience you're having in that space, you're understanding how to trust again. You're understanding how to have relationship skills again. Mm-hmm. So the pleasure and the orgasm and the expansiveness is icing on the cake, but the cake is about living a life well lived, mm-hmm. essentially. So you're actually learning how to be in connection with others. And that's a huge part of our healing process is that human contact.
Hmm. What do you think about butt stuff?
I love butt stuff. I wish, you know, I feel bad for men with the stigma attached to butt stuff because, you know, that is your magic button is there.
Is that the button?
There's a button there.
There's a button
and
right there.
You know there's a button there, don't you? Don't be coy with me, Aaron. But yeah, there's that magic button and it's a wish that people can, yeah, expand beyond like, oh, what is and is not okay, because it's just biology. It's our anatomy. And
what about for the butt stuff for the gals?
Butt stuff for the gals. I mean, you know, everyone has their preference, but there can be so much pleasure. Mm. I think it really boils down
There's no button back there.
Or
is there more like buttons?
There's so many buttons, you know, on a woman. I mean, her fucking brain is a button. Like, guys, get it together, you know, because women are such aural, you know, creatures. Not oral, aural. And I know that for a lot of men.
Is that like hearing?
Yeah, hearing audible? Like the stimulation, because the mind is really such a powerful place. And I think especially when men and women are exploring dominance and submission, men really rely on their physical strength and they want to throw the girl around like a rag doll. And that's really cool. Like, I'm not saying anything bad about that, but
it's half the coin.
Being able to really get her dripping before you even touch her and really being able to connect to her on that level is really powerful. For women as well. I mean, we have so many buttons. I know men think we're so complicated.
How does a fella get said gal dripping and ready for pleasure?
Yes. I mean, there's so many ways, but usually it's really that presence and really being connected to your cock and balls and like really like being in that power state and being able to hold with confidence the container so that she can really let go. That really is such an aphrodisiac for women to know that, okay, especially in this day and age, I can actually be in my receptivity. I can be in my femininity. He knows what he's doing and I can allow myself to open to him because I know he has me. So I think you want to start getting your woman off, like look her dead in her eyes and say, I've got you. You're safe. And I want you to let go. Yeah, write that shit down.
I've got you. You're safe.
Safety is such a turn on that is really taken for granted because men don't necessarily always understand the woman's desire for feeling safe because we're always sort of on that defense mode because of being women. So if you can really make a woman feel safe with your presence and your accountability and your strength and all of these things, then it's just fireworks and waterworks.
So the first step for a man to make a woman feel safe would probably be to find trust and accountability and safety within himself.
Yes, and to actually inhabit his cock and balls.
Both cock and balls.
Same, yes, please, inhabit those cock and balls.
Is there any priority between the cock or the balls?
Equally important, and okay. If you only have one ball, that's okay. Right. Inhabit your cock and ball. Same.
How does one inhabit their cock and balls?
Yeah, it's a willfulness and direction of energy. So as men, feeling into pulling the energy up from the earth and letting it flow up. Because in Tantra, the male energy and in Kundalini, the energy is going up for men, but it goes down for women. So what's interesting about that difference is that in order for a man to be in his sexual pleasure, it has to go through the first chakra, which is the root chakra, and then it reaches the genitals. So the first chakra represents money, security, livelihood, home. And as long as a man feels solid in that place, he can get excited, he can get aroused, and he can be really in his erotic power. A woman's the opposite. So the woman has to feel like connection through her seventh, sixth, fifth, fourth, all the way down to her second. So that means that she needs to feel connected to source and connected to her vision and her expression and her heart and her identity. And then after all of that, she can be really connected to the fullness of her pleasure. Mm. So as the man, if you can help her feel safe enough to open to all of those channels, then she can really be in her full pleasure with you.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And then the gal would do that in turn for the fella.
Yeah, if the woman is creating an environment of safety, and the man just feels solid in his livelihood and his safety and security and all of that, he can really meet her in that erotic space. So,
but what I'm saying, the gal will open the man up to the upper parts.
That's absolutely right.
The upper room.
Tantra believes that women are from the heavens, here to have an earthly experience, and men are from earth, here to have a heavenly experience. And when they come into union with each other, they're able to bring each other to those higher states. Hmm. Yeah.
How interesting.
Poetic.
When you're setting up a scene for mm-hmm. someone, mm-hmm. is it something, so you're doing an intake, you're crafting something specifically based on them, you're kind of like making like a soup.
Yeah.
In a way. And you're like, okay, this is the stuff. Are you doing penetration?
I have done penetration. So this doesn't go for every dominatrix, but my basic guidelines is that I am available to participate in penetrative activities on another person, but I'm not going to be receiving any sort of physical penetration, not any full nudity on my behalf, things of that nature.
Are you using devices?
Yeah.
Hands.
Uh-huh. Hands. Mm-hmm.
Feet.
I have done feet before. It's been a while. But yeah. You know, I have done, everything from, dildos and accoutrements like that to stuff with my own body, for sure. Mm. Yeah. But what is most important to me is, again, the difference between regular kink and conscious kink is intention. So if someone reaches out to me and is like, I'd like to have a session with you where you're going to peg me, I'm probably not going to be available for that kind of encounter unless we can really dive into, why do you want to be pegged? What is the purpose of that? What does it do for you? And is there a way to bring you into a higher elevation through that desire that's going to mean more than just the act itself, but maybe is going to be leading you to something even bigger and better?
Yeah.
So that is the work that I'm interested in doing as a therapist and as a tantrika and a dominatrix, is like going beyond, again, what's surface and getting curious and working with clients that really want to go deeper in that sense.
For a couple that wants to start on this path of deepening their sensuality and sexuality and intimacy, what would be, if we got kind of like a basic couple, mm-hmm. whatever judgment that would be, but like kind of more like functional sex, you know, we schedule it every Thursday, mm-hmm. 7 p.m. so we can get to bed on time, you know, we have a couple orgasms, you know, and then we get back to work.
Do those people exist?
I know them.
I do.
Yeah. I don't hold them very close, mm-hmm. you know, because it's not typically, we wouldn't like, well, we can align on some things, but that's like, I know of one person actually, there's really only one, I'm thinking of one person specifically it's actually like a scheduled weekly experience.
I mean, I appreciate the intention and where's a little bit of that flavor of spontaneity and electricity as well. So yeah, there's a balance there.
Yeah, I mean, there's something just to scheduling and like prioritizing and like, you know, like this is a priority.
Regimented.
We need to have this, but then also hopefully maintaining spontaneity simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But for that couple that I'm labeling the judgment of basic, which probably isn't appropriate to label such a judgment or to be judgmental in general, what would be the baby steps to start to like dip their feet into the pool of something, say like tantric?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when people are using sex as functionality, like I'm going to have sex to have an orgasm or to get pregnant or whatever those functional things are, that's kind of what I equate vanilla to. It's not necessarily the absence of kink, but it's using something that's actually one of the most miraculous things that we have access to as human beings on this really basic level. So wanting to get curious about how to create longevity in the relationship by introducing elements of something that feels more like novelties and being able to also tap into our human desire to be in the flow of the adventure of life almost. Because quite often, you know, we're spending all this money on our personal development and we're working on our bodies and how to better ourselves. But when it comes to our sexuality, it's something that we leave for last if we ever visit it at all. So for a couple that's in a relationship, and quite often that what happens is somebody doesn't feel super fulfilled. Like there's something that's coming up for the couple that is feeling like something's missing, or I feel like I want more. Because if everything's feeling great and everything feels like it's serving them, then most people don't change in those states. It usually isn't until there's a bit of a pain point happening and there's something that's not feeling right.
Do you find it's usually the woman that's more adventurous than the guy?
That's a good question, because I've found that it is a little bit down the middle. Unfortunately for women and their sexuality, their relationship to sex is very different than how men were raised around their relationship to sex. For a woman to desire sex is way more taboo and has way more weight of shame and judgment than for men. You know, boys will be boys and you're watching porn, and it's not a healthy situation for either sexes. But for women, they're not actually given as much permission.
That's why I would think there'd be more desire for women.
Exactly. So it can go either way, because I have a lot of men saying like, how do I get my wife to get kinky? And we talk a lot about like, well, how do we create a safe environment for that conversation to feel good for a woman? Because there's a lot of stigma and trauma for them to even like sex to begin with. But when people ask me about the differences of sexual appetite between men and women, I found women have a huge sexual appetite, even more than men so often.
That's what I find. And if there's conversations like this,
yes.
And now I've like, I don't know, I'm, you know, I'm like quite comfortable talking about this stuff in general, probably too comfortable at times. But what I find is if you make something weird, then it's weird. If you don't,
right,
then it's not.
Right.
You know, like, exactly. I think if you're communicating about something of like, oh yeah, like that's, you know, talking about butt plugs, or, you know, whatever
no
the thing
whoop,
is, as long
whatever.
As it's not like, as long as it's like an appropriate place to be communicating, and like you understand that you have enough rapport and it's like a safe thing and all that stuff, and you're not like creeping people out.
Yeah.
There's a fine line for someone to be able to understand what that is.
It's so true.
I'm sure I've passed that line many, many times, and it's like a learning curve. But what I find with that is it seems like guys are like, oh yeah, like cool, yeah, like whatever. Mm-hmm. It seems like girls are like more like, oh, like yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's more of like this ravenous interest,
yes,
that I experience from females. Mm-hmm. Whereas dudes are more like yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, bro.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like this like like seething like desire,
yes,
from the feminine is
it's true.
My limited bias experience of
well
of
women
that.
Really crave that depth and intimacy on a level that maybe can surpass men. We all do. We all crave connection, depth, and intimacy.
Yeah.
But it's part of a woman's identity in that relationship format to really have that present in her life, to feel fulfilled again, to feel like she has a safe container to really open herself up in. And that is so dependent on the relational quality of the experience. Men can actually have amazing orgasms and really wild sex with a complete stranger. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't necessarily have to always have that depth and intimacy for them to reach that pleasure. But quite often women have that desire. And I feel you about like not making it weird in a sense, because when we're talking about being turned on by the taboo, it's really hard to talk about taboo without also talking about shame. And shame is such a big part of sexuality, but we can actually use that shame to enliven and create electricity in our sex lives. Mm. Like there's this quote by John Waters, and he says that, "I'm so glad I was born Catholic, because sex will always be dirty for me."
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about like, I know that my desires, you know, according to the Bible, is like shameful because he's a gay man. And
yeah.
But I'm actually like going to embrace that and be like, fuck yeah, I'm a kinky motherfucker. Mm-hmm. And enjoy that there's some shame there, because that's actually creating the buzz and the aliveness for me at the same time.
I want to take a moment and share about one of the only supplements that I bring with me when I travel and the thing that I drink first thing when I get up every morning. That is a scoop of AG1. I'm a big fan of AG1. I have been for years. Reason being, it's a one-stop shop to make sure I'm covering the bases for my vitamins, my minerals, and also prebiotics and probiotics. After drinking a cup of AG1, I feel fantastic. It tastes delicious. And like I said, it is one of the only things that I bring because it is so darn convenient. AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily. And that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/align. That's drinkag1.com/align. And I think you guys will really enjoy.
Yeah, it's ironic that the concept of religion is really like that. That's like the birthing of kink, like the origination of kink and shadow and
thanks,
darkness.
Catholic Church, like made all these kinky people, you know.
Yeah.
Repression. It's repression.
It's by casting the judgment that there creates this bifurcation of right and wrong.
Totally.
You know, and shadow and light. And oftentimes, I think the person to be like the most suspicious of is the one to suggest that they are the light, you know, as opposed to just something that's a little bit more like open to all.
Yeah.
Perhaps all is the light.
This is a human experience.
We can cast light on all things.
Absolutely. It's very true.
It's a very ironic thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've played around the world and it's so interesting in different countries and different places I've been to see the differences of desires. Because, you know, like in Japan, some of the wildest, kinkiest, more unique and unusual requests and things that I've ever heard.
Why is that? Why are Japanese people so kinky?
Well, it's interesting because they have a society of like, you know, the individualism is really sort of frowned upon. It's all about the whole, for example. So this individualism is really sort of shunned almost. And we're talking about a society of, you know, samurai and falling upon your sword if there's shame and, you know, like these depictions of octopus raping women and the sort of hentai and comic book styles that they've grown up with. And that's out in the open. This is a place where you can buy used underwear from schoolgirls in a vending machine, for fuck's sake. And so when something like... That's what it says. The packaging says it's from... it's dirty used underwear from schoolgirls. Who knows really? But when
I wonder who's
something
actually
like
wearing those underwear. How does one procure that job? I could have had that job as a 15-year-old after I do my hot tub session, my Tony's pizza, throw in some panties, ship them out.
There you go. You could have been a billionaire already. Invest your money in that dirty underwear.
Missed opportunity.
But anything that goes underground, anything that's not expressed cleanly, because we're afraid of the repercussions of maybe being exiled and not belonging, is going to go underground somehow. And when things go underground, all kind of wacky things can happen, but also some really creative, imaginative things can happen. So that's really runs wild in Japan and so many other countries as well.
Where are places that you still experience remnants of shame or fear or guilt or contraction or resistance
in myself?
Or avoidance? Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think about the ways that I hold myself back all the time because of my ego and wanting to be cool and wanting to be liked and all of these things. Like, you know, when I talk about our sexualities and the struggles of being a human in our sexualities, I'm working with the same things. Like, there's so many ways that
you're a student to all the people you're teaching.
It's so true, because we're all in this together at the end of the day. And I wanted to bust the myth that, you know, sexuality should be done in private and it's something that's secretive and nobody should know about. So when you're really like forthright, and I love that about you as well, of being able to talk about these subjects so openly and creating permission for other people, I'm still learning to create that permission for myself. There's so many fantasies that I haven't lived out yet.
What are they?
Oh my gosh.
Why
are you going to help me?
Let's talk about it.
Something so simple. Like, I haven't been with two men at the same time.
Oh.
Yes.
Do you want like a gangbang, or do you just want a couple of fellas?
I think starting, I think I'm going to crawl before I run. I'm going to just start with
Black,
the two men.
White, Asian,
that doesn't
Hispanic,
matter.
What's the preference?
What the desire is to really feel an overwhelming sense of masculine energy where I have no choice but to completely submit. Because even in heterosexual erotic encounters that I've had where I've been the follower or I've been submissive, there's still like this part of me that's like, I've been doing this for 23 years. I probably know more about how to be an erotic leader than most of the men that I get paired up with. So mm-hmm. there's a hard thing for me to really like let go and just be in the moment. But I have this desire to feel like, well, if it was two men and they were both manhandling me, the just sheer number of it would overwhelm my system to the state of like, I just have to submit at that stage.
How are you just letting go of control?
I have trouble with it. Mm. I have trouble with it even now. And I still have such a desire to be able to surrender. I can surrender in the right conditions, but then again, is that really being able to surrender? And when it comes to specifically sexuality and being led through a kinky experience, it's hard for me to let go because I tend to feel like the man that's working with me or the man that's playing with me is holding himself back as well because he's afraid of how I'm thinking about how he's doing this or that. And
what would happen to you if you surrendered?
I think easily I could get hurt, right? Mm. Something could happen. Something bad could happen. Mm. And there could be a story around like, would I be able to recover from something like that? Cognitively, of course I know I can. I've been through all kinds of things in my life. And in that, again, sexual space, in that erotic space, it feels like the stakes are a little bit higher in a sense. So I know that there's these qualities that already exist for me. And wanting to find a male practitioner or a man who really understands these really sensitive nuances is something that I would be super open to. And I'm training men and women to do this kind of work, but there's very few of us that have that same type of skill set that's out in the world.
How does that show up in a relationship for you?
Well, dating has been interesting because I date both men and women, and usually dating women's very easy for me because I tend to be more of the dominant leader of that dynamic. I date women that are very feminine and very girly. However, for men, I don't want to date men that might lean more towards their femininity. I like to feel like I'm a man and really comfortable with his masculinity, for example. Mm. And sometimes those types of men can feel really intimidated by the idea of a woman who's really connected to her power and is also really well informed and knowledgeable about her sexuality. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting that sometimes a man is like intimidated by me because they think that I won't be able to be in my femininity and surrender, but that's really what I long for. And being met with like that certainty almost would be such a welcomed experience for me.
A book from Paul Arden calls it Whatever You Think the Opposite. And I find that with people as well. So if someone's like a sex worker or someone's like really like, you know, I've dated girls that, you know, do like OnlyFans and things of the like, and they're very like, their career and just the way that they exude and present themselves is very like sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And then I find typically with them historically based off my N of one experience, oftentimes there's actually like outside of that, they're very like protective, you know, and
totally.
very like, oh, like you're not very sexual
at all. Or at least it's just not out there. Like,
your whole world is around that. But then like so when it actually comes to like dating, there's a lot of insecurity and a lot of like, I don't trust, like trust is very challenging. And then there's also them electing to objectify themselves. And then it kind of perpetuates probably, you know, something that originated from
their
childhood or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So like confirms that bias they already had.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting talking to you and you're like, oh, like,
I would love
the Dom
that.
And all that.
Dom the
it's like,
fuck
and
out
you're
of
like,
me.
And you're like, yes, like, I just want to submit.
I love it.
Just
I
please.
Love it.
Submit.
So good.
Submit.
Tell me what to do. I don't want to think for myself anymore. I'm just tired of it. Have you heard of a term called Dom Tamer? So Dom Tamer is a term that, a lot of dominatrixes use this term. So it might be more of an insider phrase, but it's essentially when a woman who's a dominatrix and understands kink and has been a lot of the time in erotic leadership actually meets a partner that can tame them, essentially. So a dom tamer is someone that is so dominant and so much in that sort of erotic power and leadership that the dominatrix or the dominant partner has no choice but to surrender.
And dominant to me, my sense in listening to you is probably like still and able to listen and able to like maintain a quote unquote safe container,
right? The container holder.
As whereas I think that many folks, if you hear dominant, it means like they're jacked, they have an axe, they drive a truck. I think one thing that is really important from a guy is to be able to like kill someone. You know, I think there is great value in that of
right.
a woman. I think the woman has this like oracle like quality where there's a vulnerability. And so you're kind of like a more highly tuned in instrument, and that tuned in instrument, that's a very sensitive instrument, also can get damaged. Whereas a guy is kind of like a big dumb gorilla. You know, and he like protects. And I think there is something to that, that likely a woman probably, if she hasn't experienced a guy that could kill someone for her, I think there's something there. Like if someone came into the home, I know the person I'm with would kill that person.
Right.
You know, or like safely
or do whatever
submit
it
them
would
or
take.
Choke them out.
Whatever
or
it would take.
Tie them up and, you know, take
to
them
restore
to jail.
Safety again.
But
whatever
if they were
that
going to
like.
Attack me, he would kill them.
Yeah.
I think there's some like carnal thing
primal.
In that. And like we wear suits and we go to school and, you know, we give ourselves these titles and all that stuff.
Right.
And then underneath that, I think there's this carnal drive that actually drives things.
So true.
And I think that there's that part as well in like the safety and listening. Because some men, I think there is such a thing as becoming too far, too yin. You know, where you're like, okay, well now you're just kind of a pussy. Like you're very safe, but I need a little danger.
Yeah, please help. Yeah. I know, right? There's such a healthy balance for what that can look like. And I think, you know, I want to say, when we're talking about dominance, especially in an erotic sense, I think a lot of women who are curious about stepping into their dominance are also like, well, I don't want to be like the guy. And I want to let people know that dominance doesn't necessarily have to be inherently masculine or feminine. Like there's because we're talking about power here, and women have their form of power just like men have their form of power. Is that correct? And same with surrender as the submissive or the follower. That's a different form of power in and of itself, because letting go can be such a powerful act that people really struggle with. So the idea of like needing to actually step into masculinity and drop your femininity doesn't have to be the case. And you're getting curious around what is true power. And it's not the power over, but it's the power with. Like I have the power to share with all. And I can do that in an erotic sense where I'm not focusing on doing a bunch of shit to my partner, but instead I'm helping my partner feel more. I'm helping my partner, you know, have a deeper experience of themselves, have more pleasure, feel more vulnerable, all of those sort of things, instead of this like very classic surface way of dominance of like, let me spank you and let me do that to you and let me do this to you.
Yeah.
There's so much power in the stillness and the invitation of stepping forward and being called forward as well. So it can really look a lot of different ways. Again, we're just talking about designs of energy, and it can flow so many different ways.
What are some sneaky ways a person could become a better lover through augmenting their intention? Like as you're talking, I'm kind of thinking like, probably just because you have a flogger or you're spanking somebody or you're got a ball gag or whatever weird kinky thing you're doing. My sense is there could probably be some intentions you could set within yourself that would augment the experience drastically.
Yes.
So would there be like, is that a thing? Is that like, does that make sense? Is there something like going up like
100%?
Yeah.
So like I think one of the biggest, tools or pieces to really keep in mind for this question is really attunement. So attunement to me is like the cornerstone of every successful erotic encounter. It is also the reason why things go completely sideways and a sexual engagement might be the worst thing that's ever happened. It's because it's the level of attunement. Mm. And the more that you're really attuned to yourself and your internal landscape, the better you're going to read your partner. So if I'm in a space with you and I'm very much in tune with myself, I really know what's going on energetically with me and how I'm using my energetic body. I can see if something comes into my realization of like, oh, my stomach feels weird, or oh, my heart's starting to race. Does that belong to me or does that belong to my partner? This actually goes beyond these consent conversations, which I think are absolutely foundational and important. But when we're talking about consent, it's like, can I do this or that to you? Yes, yeah, or no? Right. Can I? And that's just there's really no nuance. The most basic thing that we can do as connecting to our partners and understanding them better. Mm-hmm. And that actually is so limited because we're still having consent violations. We're still getting into trouble. We're still having vulnerability hangovers. So what's happening here is actually the level of attunement. There's a misattunement that's happening. And when I do these play parties, I have couples, men and women, showing up all the time. And what I notice is the man is really connected to his desires and what he wants, but he's totally not attuned to the woman he's speaking to. And I see the opposite with women. The women are super attuned to what's going on with the man, but completely disconnected from what they truly want and desire. And there's a way that they keep missing each other. Mm. So to have an opportunity of becoming a better lover is to really be aware of your level of attunement with yourself and with your partner. I'm sure you've heard of the creepy guy syndrome, right?
Nope.
Okay. Well, it's never been something that you have to deal with, but women have this sense of like, what is that creepy guy energy of like feeling like
that's
he's not aware.
That's what I was saying with the intention.
Yes,
thing.
Like the intention.
You can get away with saying a lot of things if your intention is like, great, I don't want to hurt you. You
know,
I don't even want to fuck you necessarily. I'd be open to it. Like maybe we could see where things go.
But you could have.
But I'm just communicating from a really, truly like neutral, non-biased, non-judgmental, benign space compared to the creepy guy or creepy girl.
Totally.
A lot of creepy girls do. That's saying the same words. And it's like, oh, they need to be arrested. Like, this isn't okay.
And it's interesting because I don't think there's a lot, as many predators out there as we think. I think that you can have all the purest intentions in the world, but if you're not attuned to your impact of your partner and your environment, then it doesn't make any difference what your intention is. It doesn't fucking matter because you're so misattuned to the way your energy is moving. You don't actually know it's leaky. Like, you know, I could sit at a play party and I can notice you and be like, oh, that's a handsome man over there. Nice. Or I could be like, you know, and that like penetrative energy through my eyes that I'm not really self-aware of because I'm not attuned to myself. I'm not attuned to the person in front of me and how it's impacting them. Mm. So this idea of like becoming attuned is really like, you know, this next level way of looking at sexuality, and it blows the consent conversations out of the water because if I'm an authority figure and I say, you know, I would love to play with you, you might say yes because of my position of power, even though like you may not be a full fuck yes. And a few days later, you might come to me and be like, Kimmy, you know, I actually didn't feel good about that. And I noticed that I had contraction afterwards and I kind of regretted it. And I could say, well, you said yes. You know, you're a sovereign being and you said yes. So I trusted your yes.
There was an irresponsibility in your part of not listening to the actual like deeper meaning of their yes.
Exactly.
And as to their tone, you can listen to like pacing language, you can watch their respiration, watch their facial features, but you're biased towards hearing what you want to hear. And you're probably subtly manipulating to garner the answer that you're looking for.
And am I calling forward like, hey, I want to acknowledge that, you know, let's say this is hypothetical. I want to acknowledge I might have a position of power that's unconscious to you, that as a teacher, that you may not be aware of this. So I want to call it forward and just know I do want to explore with you erotically, but I want to call into it that I also have this power differential going on. And I want you to know it's okay to say no. And I'd actually like you to think about it and get back to me in an hour or so, because I really want to make sure you're making this decision from yourself and that you feel attuned to yourself in that decision. But we don't see a lot of people in leadership doing that, especially in erotic spaces. So while it's important to empower ourselves and to have self-responsibility, it's also really good to remember that when we're doing and dealing with eroticism, it's fucking messy. Like, it's really, really messy. I could tickle you one day and you're having an orgasm, or I could tickle you the exact same way in a different day, and it's triggering your darkest fears and a past childhood trauma. Mm. Like, that's how fucked up this shit is. So really, that attunement is the first step of really getting clear on where you're at and where your partner's at, and that will navigate how to show up in every situation.
What is an exercise, or how can a couple attune to each other for better sex?
Good. Yeah. So taking a moment, breath, sound, and movement. Mm. And that is the tantric path for connection to self and to be connected to the Eros energy. So starting with our breath, noticing what's happening in our own breathing, maybe syncing our breathing up so that we're breathing at the same time. We might be sharing like how we're feeling in our bodies in that moment. Like, you know, if you're with your female partner and she wants to be more in the follower position, you could even eventually start to move that from a neutral space, and you could really start to lead her through the breathing process like you did with me earlier when we were doing some breath work together. Mm. You could have said like, Kimmy, while you're, you know, breathing, I want you to tell me how you're feeling in your body, and I can give you some information and get curious around like, what are the physical sensations I'm feeling? Yeah. What are the emotions and where are they? I'm going to share that information with you. You're going to do the same. We're going to have some eye contact and do some eye gazing. Mm. And we're going to, you know, be vulnerable and share what's going on for us so we can essentially set each other up to win, you know, so you're not a mind reader and you're like wondering what's going on with her and the energy feels off, but I'm not sure, she's not saying anything. Like, no, let's sit down and tell me how you're feeling in your body. Mm. This is what I'm feeling in my body. Mm. Let's slow our breathing down even more. In fact, I want you to really close your eyes, and I'm going to maybe come over to you and do some soft touch. Notice what that feels like in your body. Notice what it feels like when you feel my body closer to yours. And you're really helping your partner bring awareness to themselves as you're attuning to each other. Mm. And that's a beautiful process that really leads people into a way of playing with each other on such a deeper level, instead of, you know, just being like, bend over, you know, let me spank you. Yeah. It could be this process more of like, let's feel ourselves more, so that when we start moving into the erotic, we're really embodied while we do it.
I think that that's something that most men would probably be like, oh, I would like to feel confident enough to be able to take a woman through something like that.
It's not easy.
But it can be kind of a jump because it's a very vulnerable thing, I think, to like suggest, hey, you know, female that I'm maybe dating in the last week or 2 weeks or month or whatever, you know, can we eye gaze?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And I'm like, God, I'm such a such a pussy, bro.
I hear that.
Like, this is not cool.
I get it.
You know,
I get
can
it.
We breathe together? Mm-hmm. You know, and you it's know. Like, but the reality, like, I learned this. I used to be more resistant to chivalry, in the sense of like
opening the door, kind of stuff.
Like, I'll get your door. I'll like make sure. I'll always like carry everything.
You were resistant.
Put my jacket
to
down in the puddle. I won't actually put a jacket down, but I might pick a girl up, like walk over the puddle.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
That's
way, better than a jacket. I don't want you to dirty your jacket.
Put a jacket on the puddle. You'd be like, "Who are you?" We're done.
Love that.
Yeah, I think I had resistance around it because I thought it was a little soft, and I feel like if I had that experience, it's like a vulnerable thing. Because like, what if I walk around? You know, I'm like 19 years old, I walk around my like dented Mitsubishi Mirage, you know, I'm already insecure about everything.
Oh,
and
wow.
I like open the door, it squeaks open.
Yes.
You know, and I'm just like, you know, I'd rather just not look at it, you know, just like, okay, we're in the car. You know, and I feel like I've shifted now for a while via the training of gals.
I'm glad. I hope that's shifting.
It's well shifted for a very long time now. But I just know this is an experience of I think some of those gestures, speaking for, you know, N of one guy, and probably, you know, probably a little bit, you know, whatever, like special interest guy, that can be an insecure thing, I think. Mm. And to have the courage and the confidence and the embodiment. to lead a woman.
Totally.
I think is fucking terrifying.
Totally. I want to tell you this like short story about this hetero couple I was working with. There was a couple, they were in their mid-30s. And they were seeing me for these private sessions, and the man wanted to really step into his dominance and power more, and she wanted to step into her surrender more. They didn't really know where to start, so they started to work with me. And at one point, we had the woman on a spanking bench, and the man was spanking her, and she was giving him some feedback, like, you know, that was a little too hard, or can you do this, and can you move your hand, and she's giving him feedback, and more I can see him getting more frustrated, and he's kind of like, and after a while I'm like, okay, hold on, what's going on, like, what's going on here? And he's like, well, how am I supposed to be dominant if she's telling me what to do? Like, you know, she's not surrendering, and she's telling me to do this and that, so I'm like her puppet essentially. That's not power. She's like completely taking my power away. And I was like, okay, let's take a moment and have a deep breath and feel into your body. What's going on? He kind of reattuned to himself.
Sounds very victim-y.
Got very grounded. Yeah, yeah, but I see it all the time. And I got curious. I'm like, okay, so like, let's break this down a little bit. You know, first and foremost, she could not take your power. You can only give it to her. Mm-hmm. And you're giving her your power right now.
Well, you can hear it in your language.
Yeah. And you're getting all stressed out and flustered because she's using her voice. And maybe she is topping from the bottom. Maybe there is a power struggle happening right now. But you're completely taking the bait. You're completely uncentered and off balance right now.
And so, you're probably actually subconsciously seeking this behavior.
Very much so, right? And so let's bring this more into consciousness.
And the reason you're seeking it is to bring it into consciousness to actually be able to repair and create reconnection. That's the reason you're here right now.
We're all mirrors. Mm-hmm. Like your girlfriend's your mirror, vice versa. Mm. So like, let's get curious about this mirror, this reflection that's coming up at the moment. And it's not like a one for one kind of mirror. Like it could be a funhouse mirror. It's not necessarily black and white, but there's a reflection happening here. And this idea of power is coming up and you're feeling threatened and you're feeling like you're not being the man in this moment. And maybe she's not surrendering. Maybe she isn't. Maybe she's like fighting you and she's not letting go. So what do we just work with what's showing up, and how do we like stay connected to ourselves? Cause that's power, and really be in ourselves and not get sort of, you know, sideswiped by this. And I'm like, what if you just told her like, hey, you know what? Come up from the spanking bench so I could see your face. I'm going to give you the next 2 minutes to say all the things you want to say.
This is what I tell my bros all the time.
Come up from like, the spanking bench.
I'm so accustomed to this conversation.
I love your...
This is like deja vu.
We should do it. We should duo. I'm telling you, this is the way
right,
to success.
Frank, up from the spanking bench. I want to do a little eye gazing. I just want to breathe with you, bro.
Yes.
Bro, calm down.
Babe, what a difference this world would be if you men did do that. Okay, I'm sorry, because that is, I have spanking sisters, and you know, there's not a sexual thing necessarily happening with my spanking sisters, but when I'm having a rough day,
oh, nice.
I call
you
my homegirl.
Sisters.
I'm like, come over and spank the shit out of me.
Wow.
They come over, they spank the fuck out of me. Maybe I cry, maybe they hold me, maybe I have an orgasm, but essentially they help me move energy in my body.
Those
and
are amazing.
And that's like the greatest friend you could have. Not somebody that's going to listen to you go on and on about your bullshit, but somebody that's like, let's do something about it. Like, let's spank you.
My question before we started the, are all bitches crazy?
I love, were you being provocative? Were you trying to provoke me in that moment? I was like, where's my crop and my petals?
Well,
somebody needs an adjustment.
Women are so irrational sometimes.
How interesting when men are starting all the wars. And I don't know. I don't know if women are as emotional as we're portrayed.
What is, so that's something, I'm obviously totally joking.
Poking at me, aren't you?
Obviously,
you naughty boy. So that's something we call bratting, by the way. Are you familiar
like
with that term?
Like nigging?
Yeah, a little bit of bratting, and the bratting is like, I'm gonna challenge you and let's see what happens. Like, are you gonna let me get to you, like, or are you gonna be like, Okay, I'll brat back a little bit. Let's have a little banter here.
Did that
here.
Get you a little bit?
That it did. It was fun. It definitely was like, ooh, he's asking for it. You know, but as a woman, I can't throw you over my shoulder, Aaron. I mean, not right now anyway. I just had knee surgery. But I can't throw you over my shoulder and teach you a lesson. So I have to use different techniques. But as a man, if a woman is bratting towards you and you have the consent, of course, you know, you could just be like, oh, really, bitch? Like, let me throw you over your shoulder as you throw a temper tantrum, you know, that might straighten her out. Depending on the relationship you have, of course. I'm not suggesting that you should always do that when somebody wants to have an emotional release.
I think
release.
We just get up from the spanking bench and have a little eye gaze.
And take a deep breath.
Take a deep
breath. Are you in your cock and balls, Aaron?
Am I? I think so.
You are? Yeah. Okay, good. I feel it.
I think I'm tapped in. Yeah, I think I'm tapped
in. What are you noticing? You know, like, and having some fun with it. But really, that's the creativity of being in an erotic engagement is like, let's play with this.
Well, I really want to talk about the
let's play.
I would really want to talk about the male female.
Mm.
How are we, men are from Mars,
oh, gosh.
Whatever. What is the difference between a man and a woman? And what do men need? What do women need? A man typically wants to fix a thing. He wants to just get her done. You know, he wants progress. A woman, oftentimes in my experience, it's like she does want that, but it's more of a circuitous roundabout. Doesn't quite make sense. But then eventually they can kind of come back and congeal. And there seems like a... How do I understand women?
Oh,
Kimmy Inch.
So how long do we have?
You know, what do I need to know as a guy? Like what do men / I need to know about the circuitous path of the female emotional self?
Well, I don't remember who said this. You might actually recognize this. I'm curious your thoughts. But it has been said that men want respect and women want love.
Mm.
And yes, of course, we all as humans want love and we all want respect on some level, but there's a bit of a difference in that desire when it comes to the sexes, for example. Mm. But ultimately, you know, for me and what I've worked with, because like I said, I've worked with thousands of clients all around the world, men, women from different backgrounds and cultures, etc. And what I keep finding time and time again is that people want to feel alive. There's a lot of fucking numbness happening in this world. Like, honestly, like, and I know I'm kind of giving you this blanket statement, but because of social media and alcohol and drugs and workaholics and things like that, that numb us out, being able to have depth and intimacy and like really feel alive in our bodies is actually so desired as we become more in this digitalized era that people want to feel alive, essentially. And the pathway and the strategies for that might be different for men and women. And I also want to be careful of being too binary in the sense of like generalizing what men want and what women want.
Yeah,
but
right.
The sense is like, you know, like I said, with women feeling safe, being loved, men being respected, and having security is a big part of their identity, especially even in Tantra, we talk about that as well.
Hmm.
So also getting into like really knowing thyself and really knowing your partner on a deeper level is so important because, again, we can generalize all day, but when we're willing to ask the deeper questions and really give each other that undivided attention in a world that has attention spans of like 3 or 5 seconds, like that stuff can be really, really healing and powerful for people because we're so numb. Like we're really distracted, we're really numbed out. And sex is an opportunity to really awaken the senses and awaken all that we have access to our senses, to our psychic abilities, to our bodies, and all of these other things. And it's really the core of our beingness. And I don't think it's by accident that it's one of our most dysfunctional and distorted parts of our existence. Like being vulnerable in our sexualities is so distorted and so confusing and so repressed. And I think that the powers that be want us to be distorted and repressed and confused in this way because it's really hard to control people that are liberated and that know inherently that they have everything they need inside of themselves and that pleasure is their birthright. People are hard to control when they understand that about themselves. Mm. So, you know, going beyond men and women and talking about humanity as a whole, like getting really connected to our sexuality locks us into that creativity of how to navigate life, but from a place of wholeness, not leaning into these structures and these outside forces that tell us we're not good enough.
So bitches aren't crazy.
I love you. Now I am going to put you over my knee. I have had enough. I have had enough. No, it's fun. It's super, super fun. I like it.
Okay. Thanks so much.
You're so welcome.
This is fun.
So fun.
Good times.
Thank you. It's definitely refreshing to speak with a man that is available for these sexual conversations and wants to learn more.
Crude idiot.
I can't wait to see your next men's group where you're having them on spanking benches. Like, this is going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I like that's going to become like a new mantra of mine. All right. Get up, bro. Get up from the spanking bench.
Look at me.
Let's have an eye gaze. I want to breathe with you, bro.
Yes. That's so powerful.
It's 2024.
Hey, I've done it with many, many men, and they're just bawling their eyes out, and it's the most beautiful, beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Where does one procure a spanking bench? Is that like an Amazon thing?
Amazon. Yeah, that's where I've gotten mine. They're not cheap. So if you're handy and you're a carpenter, like, and you can build your own, like, go for it. Because they're expensive. Basic.
All right, sex toys. I'm sorry. You got to go. It's 11:52. You got to go right now?
No, I have like 10 more minutes.
You're okay. Okay. 10, sex 10 toys.
Yeah.
If we're going to get started with sex toys, what's the top 3 to 12 sex toys a person needs? I'm joking about the 12, but I mean, I guess joking serious. But like top 3, like, you don't have anything. You got, your girlfriend's got a vibrator. You have maybe a fleshlight, you know, an old fleshlight from 4 years ago. You've scheduled sex dates every Thursday at 6:30 so you get bed on time.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do?
Toys. Yeah. So in a kinky realm, like, I think about how to manipulate the senses. So I'm always thinking about toys for impact play and spanking, toys to stimulate the senses, like different textures that could be something that's more rough or more soft, you know. I'm a MacGyver. I could turn anything into a toy in the studio. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, you can use these wires to tie each other up. Like, I really talk about kinkifying your life. And kinkifying could be taking a spatula, an everyday mundane tool, and using it in a kinky setting. And you could even have fun with your partner and say, like, find some stuff around the house that we can incorporate into something sexual with each other. Mm. But really, I cannot drive this home anymore. Say that again.
I'll bring sanitary wipes whenever I go over your house. I'm in your kitchen.
Does anyone want pancakes?
I'm fine.
You're so funny. But honestly, what you really need to create a really explosive, amazing, kinky experience is your hands, your mind, and your heart. And honestly, that's all you need at the end of the day, because that what you got on you is the most important components. And people use toys as a crutch, but I really invite you to, use what you have and then use the toys to just bring on any more or even more enhancement of the situation.
What do you think about clitoral or
stimulation
or dong enhancement in the sense of like either making more stimulated or larger for a dong?
Yeah.
Probably girls don't need too much bigger clits. They're probably not too worried about that.
Yeah. I'm neutral in that sense of like, it's all good and there's nothing bad or wrong about it. And it's also, I just get curious around when we use things as a crutch and we use things, not for what they're intended for, but as a way of trying to make up for and compensate for something that we don't feel like we already have. So getting curious around, what am I using this toy for? Is it a crutch or is it really enhancing the moment? Same thing with drugs, same thing with alcohol, same thing with anything outside of ourselves. So just getting curious around like, what's the purpose and intention of the toy? And to remember that it really comes from me.
What's your preferred title for male genitalia and female genitalia?
Cock is my favorite.
Cock's
for men.
A good one. I like dong because it's fun to say.
Dong is such a...
I feel exotic when I say it because it sounds kind of Asian.
Yeah. I mean, definitely not penis. It's the worst. But
penis and vagina.
I don't like dick either. Yeah, vagina's terrible.
Yeah, dick's not that
cock
nice.
Cock is great. And I loved pussy for a long time, but if I want to soften it a little bit, I do actually like yoni. I think it's actually sweet and pretty. So yeah, yoni and pussy, I think, are
yes.
Are
I think
epic.
We still don't know what to call. I feel like cock's pretty definitive.
Cock is great.
I think across the board,
pull out your cock and
yeah. I feel like if we had like an election, like cock, I think we still don't know what to call a pussy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Still
it's so
little,
taboo.
Still a little curious.
Oh my god. What do we call this forbidden, you know, fruit here?
Yeah.
You know, when I was a sex toy, when I was a sex operator. I wasn't allowed to use that kind of wording. I wasn't able to use penis or cock, or so I had to use fruit. Like I had to say fruit terms instead. Jesus. So I was like, pull out your banana, or like, I want you to lick my peach. The guy could say whatever he wanted, like, but that. Because of the rules and regulations of that line, I wasn't able to say. So I had to get very creative. But yeah, cock is the best.
Well, thank you for entertaining all of my immaturity. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. I love these conversations because it is, for whatever reason, taboo. It's very odd. I don't know if it's ironic exactly, but it's at least odd that the thing that allows everything to exist in humanity is also the thing that people are the most insecure about.
Right. I know.
Isn't that amazing? People are so cute.
We had such a wholesome conversation that felt so wholesome to me. Like it was such a sweet little conversation we just had. How lovely.
It was fun. You know I'm having fun when I kick my legs. Yeah.
Great. <That's-> Well, that's okay. I just had like all these creative bodies and multiple orgasms while we've been talking. So so I had fun too. Thanks.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. Why? Because I feel, so when I say orgasms, you know, I'm feeling again that surge of energy and aliveness that isn't limited to my genitals, but just throughout my whole body, and had multiple heart orgasms while we've been talking because it's been so safe and pleasurable. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That's really meaningful for you to share.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. Thanks so much for co-creating this.
Thanks for making me come. I appreciate it.
So if for folks that want to go deeper into all of this stuff, you have courses and programs and communities and live workshops, and you
in
do one on one stuff.
Online.
There's like people can get involved.
Yeah, we have
people get involved.
A special experience for your viewers. We're doing something called the Dom Mastery Course. It's the art of erotic leadership for those who want to understand owning their power in the bedroom and outside of the bedroom. It's a 6-month course. I'll make sure I give you that information so your viewers can get a 10% discount on that. But it's a 6-month course online with an in-person experience. And that's really next level. I also do private coaching. I have other in-person events, and I do something called the Playroom, which is my free online community where we can have these evolved, heart-centered, erotic conversations with other people and learn more from the collective. So would love to get that message out and have everyone drink the kinky Kool-Aid so we can all have a more enhanced, well-lived life.
I love it. What's the URL or address
URL is it's andmorepresents.com. And for the Dom Mastery, it's andmorepresents.com/DomMastery/align.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. And so if they do the /align, they'll get 10% off on that.
That's correct.
I love that. Thanks for doing that.
You're so welcome.
Social media is Kimmy Inch.
That's right. Kimmy Inch on all different platforms.
All right. And I think that I look forward to getting myself a spanking bench.
Yes.
Bringing the bros over. Get a couple.
Please let me be a fly on the wall of that. That is just my
throw in the game.
I already told you what the fantasies I haven't lived out yet. So I think I need to see a men's group on spanking benches. I think that would be highly arousing.
I think the bros would appreciate that. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kimmy.
Thank you for tuning in. That's it. That's all. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. If you did, jump over to the YouTube page or Line Podcast, you can see the video version of this with the beautiful Kimmy and myself in the studio in Austin. Thanks for subscribing over there. Thanks for subscribing here. Thanks for reviews, and hope you're having a beautiful week, and I will see you next time.